This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Since January 6th, a lofty mountain of evidence and testimony and analysis has arisen on what took place at our nation's capital. But in his address last week, President Joe Biden evoked one of the most visceral images of the day.
Close your eyes. Go back to that day. What do you see? Rioters rampaging. Waving for the first time inside this Capitol, Confederate flag that symbolized the cause to destroy America, to rip us apart. Even during the Civil War, that never, ever happened. But it happened here in 2021.
As comparisons and warnings of a civil war to come accumulate, historians, researchers, pundits, and politicians passionately argue the proposition. You can find it in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, The New York Times alone ran 5 pieces on the subject this week. Of course, it's all over cable news.
Is America headed towards civil war, as many fear, or at least a division into 2 countries, one red, one blue?
From the far right, the references are grimly enthusiastic about the prospect of conflagration. Here's Representative Madison Cawthorn last August talking to constituents in North Carolina.
Because, you know, if our election systems continue to be rigged and continue to be stolen, then it's going to lead to one place, and it's bloodshed.
For us in the news biz, this first is a battle over rhetoric. In the current context, is civil war a metaphor, a proposed diagnosis for what ails our country? Or is it meant to be taken literally? In a recent New Yorker essay, editor David Remnick suggests both. I should mention he's also, of course, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour and my WNYC colleague. Welcome to the show, David.
It is so great to be here with you, Brooke. A little weird, but so great.
Last week on your show and in the magazine, you took on the potential for an American Civil War with historian Barbara Walter with a book about civil war and how to stop it. And we'll be hearing from her later this hour, too, because we're doing civil war this week. It's in the ether.
Yeah.
But we're doing it with some ambivalence. Did you feel any?
Of course, some ambivalence, because the phrase civil war is terrifying. We conjure visions of probably the worst moment in American history, or at least on American soil in the 1860s, pitched battles and 25,000 people dying in an afternoon. But that's not the kind of civil war anybody should be thinking about. The phrase is meant to evoke a sense of sporadic, unpredictable, but highly destabilizing moments of violence that we've already seen examples of. In the modern sense, in Oklahoma City, at the U.S. Capitol, plots to kidnap the governor of Michigan. So I think that there are many kinds of journalism, and one kind of journalism is the journalism of warning, making sure that we as citizens are alert to a possibility that if we ignore it, it's far worse.
But have you ever jumped on board a bandwagon of horror, only to find out it was overhyped? I mean, with so much misery and fear in the world, sometimes I fear that pulling that lever is just too easy. I feel the need to do a lot of self-interrogation before proceeding.
Well, I'd remind you of the late 80s. A scientist named James Hansen came before Congress, and he said, we are witnessing the perilous condition that we now call climate change or climate emergency. Bill McKibben then wrote a book called The End of Nature, which was mocked by the editor of Harper's Magazine as infantile and creating undue anxiety. And if we had listened more carefully in the late 80s, when it was easier to fix this problem, we would not be here in 2022, completely consumed with very legitimate anxiety about the very state of our world. When I'm too sanguine or calm as a journalist, that can lead to a kind of complacency. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the country's experience in 2003. The journalism as a whole, I'm not saying all of it, but as a whole, was not aggressive enough.
In the run-up to the war?
Absolutely. I plead guilty to that. To this day, mm-hmm. It's a torture not to have been able to punch an adequate hole through the Bush administration's case for war. And the consequences were horrific.
In The Atlantic, journalist Fintan O'Toole said that there's a high price mm-hmm. to pay for Civil War talk. He recalls growing up in Dublin and hearing his mm-hmm. father warn that Civil War was coming. He wrote, quote, "Once that idea takes hold, it has a force of its own. The demagogues warn that the other side is mobilizing. They're coming for us." That year, 1972, was one of the most murderous in Northern Ireland, precisely because this doomsday mentality was shared by ordinary, rational people like my father.
Fintan O'Toole is brilliant. I think so much. I tried to hire him to The New Yorker many years ago. But I think he's wrong. The reason that things were so awful in 1972 in Ireland was because people were blowing up bars.
What caused that? I think he's arguing that this made communication between the sides more difficult.
I didn't think that Fintan made that case very well. I think a journalism and a literature of warning is of great value. James Baldwin writes The Fire Next Time in the 60s, warning that if conditions don't improve, conflagration will come. A useful warning that we ignore at our peril? I think so. And believe me, I also understand why it's such a drag. I mean, here we are, more than 20 months of living in a pandemical world, mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of people in this country dead, millions in the world. A climate catastrophe is on the back burner. Our politics are a mess. So I totally understand why deepening the bad mood of the country is difficult. But what's the choice? To put our heads in the sand?
I don't think it's just put your head in the sand or sound the klaxons. I guess it's how you do it. I think one thing that the Trump years bequeathed journalism, because there had to be triage on all the outrages that were occurring, was to report according to our principles. Something that the mm-hmm. passionless cadre of journalistic priests of maybe just one generation behind us would have thought was inappropriate.
How do you mean?
We can use our principles to figure out what is the most important and not treat everything mm-hmm. the same. This is something Jay Rosen and others have said. Admit that you believe in democracy, that you believe in free elections and a free press. Report and choose your stories according to a set of principles and values. I think we have to now.
I agree with that. I agree with Jay Rosen on that. The question is how you go about reaching people who may not agree with you about certain policy preferences that you have and all the rest. There's also different kinds of journalism.
As somebody who stares down a lot of journalism, most of the speculative stuff is a lot of hogwash.
And a lot of columns are repeating the same thing over and over again. There gets to be different kinds of reaction to that. Either it becomes an amen corner, mm-hmm. or some people stop listening and think that because it's been repeated so often, it can't possibly be be true or interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what's the use of just that? Again, I'm not arguing against covering this topic. Yeah. That's what we're just about to do. I just don't want to take the easy route, I guess, is what I'm worried about.
I don't know the easy route here. To me, the easy route is, and I take it every morning, is to watch SportsCenter. Otherwise,
no,
I'll go insane.
That's not easy. That's just rest. So let's say there's nothing to be lost by sounding the alarm of civil war. Mm. What do we gain?
When we talk about the kind of civil war that Barbara Walter is referring to. What she's talking about is a complex of things that is not day-to-day necessarily or consistent, but takes in acts of violence or insurrection that are organized with militias that have the support of people like Steve Bannon, like a former national security advisor, and, wait for it, a former president of the United States who is quite likely going to run for president again and who shows nothing but love and support for the most violent and or deluded political actors in the country. Now, is that Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? No. But is it potentially disastrous for the future of this country and democracy? You're damn right it is. If the metaphor, if that's what it is, of civil war makes us pay attention, I think it's legitimate because the facts bear it out. To make us pay attention and become better citizens somehow, that to me is not only a legitimate activity, it's a necessary one.
Not to succumb to a lack of imagination.
Or not to succumb to the very human desire to look away.
David, thank you very much.
It is my pleasure, Brooke.
David Remnick is the editor of The New Yorker. You can listen to his discussion of this topic on his New Yorker Radio Hour podcast episode, How Civil Wars Start. Coming up, would civil war here look the same as it does abroad? This is On the Media.